The Ghost Trap by Nick Wallace, read by Louise Jameson. The walls were breathing. Leela had seen many strange things in the weeks since meeting the Doctor, but this vessel was testing her nerves. The corridor had been dark as they'd stepped out of the TARDIS, with a floor that was soft and giving. Strange noises echoed in the blackness. The Doctor had produced a tube to make light, another one of his tricks that she was learning to call science. It was only then, when he had shone the torch over their surroundings, that Leela had taken measure of this place. The ceiling was low, and odd shapes loomed around them. The Doctor removed his hat to duck under a beam that cut across the corridor, and as Leela followed, she took a closer look. It was hard and yellow, covered in a slick orange sheen. Tracing it back to the wall, she realised what it reminded her of. Bone protruding from flesh. It was then she had spotted the movement. The walls were breathing. A slow rhythm to match the echoing noises. An animal whimpering in pain, Leela thought. Then she caught the scent on the air. "This is not right," she said. "This place smells of death." The Doctor sniffed. "The air's a little stale, but not every smell is death. This is just another spaceship." "I have seen spaceships. They were not like this." As she said it, she turned a corner and found a leathery door barring their way. Leela pointed at it. "This is like the inside of some beast." The Doctor passed her the torch and pulled out another tube, the one he called screwdriver. "There's more than one way to build a spaceship," he said. "Unless I'm very much mistaken, and I rarely am, this is a Haimak vessel, and the organic spaceship is a Haimak speciality." "Haimak," Leela repeated slowly, trying out the word. "Very good," the Doctor nodded. "And what is Haimak?" The screwdriver hummed and the door heaved open. The Doctor peered through into the darkness beyond. "The Haimak," he said, "are space mariners. They're ghosts." The Doctor felt the change as he stepped through the hatch. The air in the corridor had been stagnant, but this had the chill of a much bigger space. He took the torch back to inspect the area before them, its stark light revealing the corners of large shapes in the dark. "A cargo hold," he said. There was a tap on his shoulder.
"Ghosts?" Leela hissed.
"Yes. Ghosts," he glanced over his shoulder. "You know what a ghost is? Spirits of the dead, that sort of thing." The past few weeks had shown him she was intelligent. The difficulty was drawing that intellect out from under all the superstitious mumbo-jumbo she'd been raised on. The look she was giving him, sharp and curious, was one he'd come to recognise as that process at work. "I have heard of these spirits," she said.
"Good. This isn't that kind of ghost."
"I do not understand." The Doctor turned on the spot, his arms outstretched.
"This is the ghost. All of this."
Leela just frowned.
"The vessels of the Haimak are the envy of the galaxy," he explained. "No one beats them through hyperspace."
"They are fast then," Leela said.
"Fast enough for people to call them ghosts."
"And this is the cry that the TARDIS heard?" The Doctor checked the signal locator in his pocket.
"Nearby," he said. "Come on."
As they walked, the Doctor reflected that under different circumstances, an inspection of this cargo hold would have been a majestic experience. Like the rest of the ship, it was a fusion of flesh and function. Almost 200 feet tall, it was lined with storage compartments and all the accoutrements of a merchant ship. Here, though, they had been grown for the purpose rather than bolted together. Muscular cranes hung from ivory tracks on the ceiling. Ligament chains reached down to the bay doors, heavy lifters waiting to bring cargo on board. Everything from crops to livestock to high-tech machinery would come through these doors, the Doctor thought. The first stage on a journey across the stars. This was a monument to hard work and simple endeavour, and it should have been full of noise and movement. If the damage in the corridor had told him something was badly wrong, the silence here revealed the scale of it. The signal locator beeped furiously. As the Doctor took it out to check the reading, they turned a corner
and found the bodies. Leela studied the dead. There were three of them, huddled together on the floor, hidden in shadow. Each wore a heavy uniform, covered in metal boxes and weapons, their faces masked. The doctor handed her the torch and pulled one of the boxes free. There was a small light on its side, blinking red.
"That's our distress signal," the doctor said.
Leela nodded. "Are these the Haimak you spoke of?"
"No, these are humans."
The doctor considered the bodies, rubbing his chin.
"Could be a salvage crew," he muttered.
As Leela watched, he crouched down and pressed his hand against the floor. The material gave, and a thin liquid bubbled up.
"No," he said, "that's not right. None of this is right."
"That," Leela said, "is what I have been trying to tell you.
This ship is in a holding orbit around a backwater star. It's a derelict. Only you don't get derelict Haimak vessels."
He sniffed the liquid on his fingers.
"She's not terribly healthy, but that orbit tells me she's still functioning."
Leela was used to the dead, but something about the position of the bodies was unnatural. She crouched down and lifted one of the visors. Then, after a moment, she unmasked the others.
"Doctor,"
she said quietly. His face froze at the first glance, and then curiosity took hold.
"Some kind of psychic shock, maybe. What do you think?"
Each face was hollow, the skin taut across its bones. Beyond that, the look they shared was unmistakable. Leela did not know who these people were, but she knew what had killed them. "They were scared to death," she said.
"Nonsense,"
the doctor snapped. He gave the bodies another glance, then pressed the screwdriver against the still blinking box.
"I wonder. It's damaged, but there may be some data intact."
There was a hiss. Then the box began to speak, barely audible, just whispers between gasps of tears.
"She should never have come here,"
it said. It was a woman's voice. Leela looked back to the body it had come from. The face was so distorted that it had been robbed of all identity.
"There's no way out now. The power's gone,"
the box continued.
"But that doesn't matter to them. The dead don't forget. They don't forgive."
Another hiss, then...
"It's coming for us."
Leela could make no connection between the husk at her feet and this voice, alive but scared, living out its last moments in the dark. "We should leave this place," she said.
"Not yet,"
the doctor answered.
"You heard what the box said."
"Those were questions," he barked, "not answers."
He moved off, finding his way to the far wall. Like the rest of the ship, it was wet and pulsing. The doctor sucked his teeth, then prized open a bulbous growth to reveal a mass of stringy flesh.
"What is it?"
"A control point. If I can open up a route to the bridge, there's a chance the ship's computer will still be active."
"A computer?"
Leela said.
"Yes, a computer. Even though it's been grown, this vessel still needs a circuit board or two."
The doctor shrugged his coat onto the floor and rolled one of his sleeves up.
"And it should be a rather more reliable witness to what happened here."
As Leela watched, the doctor closed his eyes and reached into the control point, concentrating as he felt around.
"I think this may be the power for the lights," he said.
There was a crunching sound, and a dim orange light filled the cargo bay. Then, before she could cry out, Leela was falling, and a moment later, she hit water. The torch spiraled away and everything went black, but in the underwater darkness, she could feel the pull of liquid and a sensation of speed as she bounced off hard surfaces. Her eyes were open, but she couldn't see anything. Flailing, she reached out for anything that might halt her passage. She needed to get to the surface to find some air, but swept away, tumbling end over end. Leela realized there was no surface to be had. Her lungs were burning, desperate. Then the current began to ease and she saw a dim circle of light. Her fingers broke the surface, finding a handhold. Leela pulled herself up out of the water, over a fleshy lip and into the clear air. She lay there, eyes closed, panting heavily. There was an electronic hiss nearby, and a moment later the doctor's voice sounded out of thin air.
"Ah, there you are." Hyperspace, the Doctor reflected, wasn't like normal space, a fact lost on most humans. For them, navigating it was an exercise in brute force. All intergalactic highways and byways complete with S-bends and shipping lanes. It was, of course, an extension of the thinking they applied in normal space-time, whereas Hymax's approach suggested a greater understanding, a realisation that hyperspace was something far more complex. Much like his own mind, he mused. Busy ruminating on the Hymax, he'd not paid full attention to what he was doing. His wrist had brushed against a ganglia while restoring the lights. On a regular ship, in among a tangle of wires and cold metal, it was a mistake that wouldn't have had consequences. But here, on a living vessel of flesh and bone, it was the kind of error you couldn't afford. That single touch had opened a hatch to the environmental subsystems and started a venting cycle. He'd managed to shut the hatch, but not before his new companion had been swept away. Another twist of his wrist had halted the venting cycle, and he'd been able to trace Leela to a maintenance shaft near the engine room. Accessing the internal communications, he was able to reassure himself that the experience hadn't done any real damage. With his apologies out of the way, he gave Leela directions for a safe rendezvous with him further on. "Once you get out of that shaft, you shouldn't have any trouble finding your way around," he assured her. "There's a lot of damage, but the hull's intact and I've restored some light and heat."
"But how will I find you?" Leela asked.
"I'm going to head for the bridge," he replied. "That shaft leads to the engine room. From there you should be able to access the central corridor. Just head forwards and I'll find you."
"And these Hymax?" Leela asked.
"If there were any still on board, they'd have made contact by now."
The moment he left the cargo hold, he realised that the assumption was another mistake. Stepping through the door, the Doctor froze, taking in the scene before him. As he contemplated the horrific sight, he started to wonder just how safe his companion might be. The Doctor had told Leela that she was in an engine room, but all she could see were massive fleshy trees interwoven with giant branches of glass. Dim pulses of light limped across those trunks in time with the vessel's breathing. As she made her way between the towers, her eyes adjusted to their light. Here, as elsewhere, the walls were shattered and bleeding. But unlike the cargo bay, the engine room was not deserted. Everywhere she looked, the dead were waiting. These were not human beings. These were small creatures with squat bodies and different-looking heads. The Hymax, Leela thought. But alien as they were, they had one thing in common with the humans: the silent scream of their dead faces. Their eyes were wide, pupils jet black against a red web of exploded veins. Every single face was contorted in pain and terror. Passing corpse after corpse, Leela began to discern a pattern. She knelt beside one which had died standing with its hands still outstretched, grasping a control on one of the glass struts. Whereas the humans had been huddled together in fear of their lives, these Hymax had died where they had fallen, and they had fallen where they worked. She unwrapped the dry fingers from the control and laid the body down.
"Find peace,"
she whispered. That was when she felt it. An emptiness in her stomach, a sudden despairing knowledge of this creature's pain. Grabbing hold of the glass trunk, Leela steadied herself. The pulses of light were growing stronger and quicker. She turned on the spot. Her skin tightened in response to a sudden chill and her breath started to show in the air, as her eye was drawn to the darkness at the back of the engine room. So the shadows themselves began moving towards her. A wave of cold air swept over her, raising goosebumps on her arms. Leela's hand went to her knife, but then she remembered what the box had said: "It is coming for us." Those humans had possessed armour and weapons, and yet still been unable to stop whatever this was. It was not the time to fight. She ran for the door, an ice-cold darkness at her heels. The cargo hold led the Doctor first onto the logistics bay, then the telemetry suite, and then the sensor array. Everywhere was the same. The Haimak were dead at their workstations, victims of an instantaneous ship-wide catastrophe. The last stop before the bridge was the internal transport hangar, the same bone runners that had held the cargo cranes extended elsewhere throughout the ship, and the majority of them converged here, a small internal station with rudimentary platforms to move crew and goods between decks. The doctor passed the carriages and their dead riders. Such stillness in a place dedicated to movement seemed eerily wrong. Then, closer to the bridge, the atmosphere changed again. The ship had been echoing with strange sounds ever since they'd arrived, but this now was a voice. Its pitch and speed changed with every repetition of the same word, over and over, rolling across the bay towards him. It said. The doctor quickened his pace. When he reached the open doorway of the bridge, sunlight met his face. The viewing screen showed the boiling cauldron they were orbiting. Squinting against the light, at first the doctor thought the room was empty, but then he heard the voice again.
Pain!
It screamed. A sole Haimak sat silhouetted in front of the instrument panels.
Pain!
It repeated. The doctor rapped his knuckles on the doorframe. Hello, he said. I was hoping for a word with the captain. There was no movement from the Haimak. Just the one word as an answer.
Pain, eh?
The doctor stepped forward. Maybe I can help you with that. I've any number of qualifications. He eased past the creature and pulled shutters down over the screens. With the light at a more manageable level, he got a better look at the Haimak, whom he was assuming to be the pilot. In many respects, its face was the same as the others, twisted and contorted, the eyes open wide. But this Haimak was still somehow clinging onto life. The doctor sank down to inspect a glass cable that ran from the creature's skull to a nearby computer bank. Leaning in close, he studied the connection to the Haimak.
Well, now, he said, it looks to me like you've been plugged into the navigation unit, and that interface is buried unusually deep in your brainstem, which doesn't make a lot of sense, unless... He snapped his fingers. That Haimak cerebrum of yours is attuned to the frequencies of hyperspace. Am I right?
It wasn't, the doctor thought, the kind of evolutionary fluke that would deliver an advantage to an individual member of a species. However, when used as part of a low-level group mind, it could be a powerful tool. A Haimak crew would form a collective consciousness that could decode the currents of hyperspace.
An understanding, he said to the pilot, that's channeled to the navigation computer through you. That's why these ships are so fast.
Pain.
The pilot whimpered.
Yes, the doctor said. I'm going to see about that.
He surveyed the instrument panels. The interfaces were more conventional here, which made accessing the ship's records easier. The link with the ship had been enough to insulate the pilot from the full effect of whatever had killed the rest of the crew. The question was, what had wrought the damage in the first place? As data began to stream across one of the consoles, his mood darkened. He'd hoped the three strangers they'd found first were ill-fated rescuers or, failing that, a salvage crew. Once again, he'd forgotten how pointless and cruel human beings could be. It seemed that a deliberately focused warp shunt had disrupted the ship's passage through hyperspace, the equivalent of a landmine blowing it back into normal space-time. A ghost trap. The doctor pulled the data recorder from his pocket.
Pain!
The pilot screamed.
You couldn't bear it, could you? He addressed the box. Knowing there was someone who understood things better than you. You could see they were quicker, but never tried to work out why. Because it's easier just to steal, isn't it?
His face creased with disgust, and he tossed the box across the room. Smacking against the wall, the recorder sputtered.
Doesn't matter to them,
it repeated.
The dead don't forget. They don't.
There was a spark and a bang, and the voice
faded into nothing. The bridge was still for a moment. Then the doctor looked between the pilot and the remains of the box.
They don't forgive, he realised.
Leela hammered on the door, but it would not open. Every door leading from the engine room had parted for her until this one. She looked again for a control that would open it, but none of the buttons produced a response. In desperation, she slid her knife between the two fleshy panels, trying to lever them apart. But as she did so, she felt a chill in the air. The darkness was still chasing her, a shadow in the air. It had pushed its way along the corridors behind her, accompanied by the low breathing of the ship. She had hoped to lose it, but ought to have known better. You could not hide from the dead. She pushed against her knife, but the door would not move. The ship's breathing was heavier now, the air somehow thicker. There was no escape. Leela pulled her blade from the door and turned around. The darkness was rolling towards her. Leela could see it was not absolute. There were hints of light and shape, then a mass of faces pressing in turn against the dark from within, giving it form. Each face was silently screaming. Leela could only hold their gaze for a moment. As she turned away, she noticed a line in the floor nearby. Glancing around, she found a bulbous knot low down in the wall. A control point, the doctor had called it. Leela drove her knife into it, and the floor opened up along the crack. She leapt into the opening, expecting water again, but instead found herself in a small tunnel. Leela crashed against its ribbed sides, the impact knocking the breath from her lungs. As she looked up, the hatch slid shut above her. The spirit had pushed through every other door, and she expected it to follow her through this one, but instead, there was nothing. And after a moment, she realised it was not coming. Rubbing her elbow, Leela inspected the space around her, a narrow tube of flesh and bone. There was just enough room to move and a dim light to see by. The tunnel seemed to run in the same direction as the corridor above, and so, lacking alternatives, Leela began to crawl. Progress was slow, and the surfaces soon began to cut into her knees and hands. As she negotiated a spear of bone that pierced the tube, she felt movement. For a moment she thought it was the spirit returning, but then realised it was a simple flow of air. A wide, vertical chasm lay in front of her, cutting her route in two. Steeling herself to make the wide jump, Leela suddenly heard an organic sucking sound. A moment later, however, a sheet of flesh and bone slid out of the wall, forming a solid bridge over the chasm. Leela's eyes narrowed as she looked around. Doctor? She called.
Who else would it be?
His disembodied voice was small and thin, but still welcome. I have seen the spirit, she said. The one that killed those men. On the bridge, the doctor leant in towards the microphone on the console.
I thought you might have done. I've been following your progress.
You knew I was here?
When it comes to life signs on this vessel, there aren't many to choose from. Three, maybe four. It's a long story.
Tell me,
Leela said, continuing on her way along the tunnel. The doctor was down to his shirt sleeves as he busily plaited a long stream of wires together. He paused what he was doing, considering his response.
Leela, would you call this ship a survivor?
Her reply was a flat statement of the obvious.
A ship is a thing.
So is your hand. But it's still part of you, isn't it?
I do not understand.
Neither did those people we found. The ones who set the trap for the HIMAC. They wanted to learn how these people navigate hyperspace. So they decided to look inside one of their ships. Only because they didn't understand the HIMAC, they had no idea what their trap would do.
But you do understand?
Oh, I've worked it out.
He looked across to the pilot. The lone HIMAC had grown increasingly hoarse, its repeated cries a barely audible whisper now.
There are two reasons why the HIMAC navigate hyperspace so well. First, they're naturally attuned to the environment, like fish in water, if you will.
I understand,
Leela said.
And the second reason?
They have a symbiotic relationship with their ships.
Everyone knows the Hymax ships are grown, but very few have ever asked why.
The doctor laid a hand on the back of the pilot's chair, mournfully following the lead that ran into the navigation computer.
Symbiotic,
Leela repeated, thoughtfully.
For all I know, the doctor continued, it may be the ships that grow the Hymax, not the other way round. Whatever the reason, if the crew are the left hand, then the ship is the right.
Working together.
Exactly.
He felt a momentary dash of pride. For all her species' flaws, Leela was showing much promise.
And because they're connected, the shock of being knocked out of hyperspace killed everybody on board.
So this spirit is the vessel's dead?
Leela asserted.
Not exactly, the doctor said grimly. The warp shunt cut the Hymax in two. It pulled their bodies back, but left that collective consciousness behind. And it's still there, trying to force its way into normal space-time, looking for a guide to bring it home.
It is the mind of the crew.
A splinter of it, yes. And it feels only one thing.
In his chair, the pilot mouthed its one word.
They're caught in that moment, the doctor said, dying forever.
What should we do?
The wiring in his hands led to the bridge doorway. He'd fused projectors to the frame, spliced in the pilot's link to the navigation systems, and was just syncing a trigger mechanism.
If we can lure the consciousness to the bridge, it should be possible to drag it back into normal space.
And this will save the Hymax?
No, he replied. The Hymax are all dead. They died the moment the warp shunt hit. Nothing can change that.
The doctor's head turned, drawn once more to the contorted face of the pilot.
But if we can free that splinter from hyperspace, those deaths will finally be over.
Leela looked down the length of the corridor. Peering into the distance, she impatiently shifted her weight from one foot to the other. For an hour, the doctor's voice had guided her through the ship's innards. According to him, whatever the tunnel was made from had shielded her from the spirit's sight. And while it would have been easier to make the journey in the corridors proper, the doctor was unsure how quickly the spirit would find her.
After all,
he said,
we don't want the greyhound catching the rabbit, do we?
On emerging from the tunnel, Leela had found herself close to the top of a long corridor, the spine of the ship, the doctor called it. According to him, when the spirit sensed her presence once more, she would have a clear run to the bridge. Only now that they were waiting to spring their trap, the spirit seemed to have lost interest in her.
Nothing is happening, Leela called.
Once again, the doctor's voice came from thin air.
Give it time,
he said. Maybe it has given up, Leela suggested.
I don't think so,
the doctor replied. There was a pause. Then his voice returned, sharper, more serious.
There's a spike in the warp sensors.
Before Leela could ask what that meant, she felt a chill deep inside her. She'd had a suggestion of it before, but then she had been running and never really felt more than a hint of its cold breath. Now it was right on top of her, an icy touch, freezing her in place. The faces pushed out of the air, in front and all around her. Leela realised that the chill was an eternal death, wrapping itself around her, dragging her down, a mass of voices calling for her surrender.
Get up,
one said. Only this voice was different to all the others. The doctor, Leela remembered. The voice's name was Doctor.
Is this how a warrior of the 17 dies?
He was shouting now. His words lit a flame, illuminating the world beyond the dark. She was still in the corridor, but slumped down, bowed by the despair on her shoulders.
Get up!
She clung to his words, dragged herself up on them. And as she moved, the spirit's grip faded. The faces recoiled, and Leela staggered away. She gained strength with each step, and in moments was running once more. The doctor was following events over the internal sensors. Leela had recovered from her faltering start and was now moving down the central corridor that ran along the ship's top deck. The entity was following close behind, but so far she was having little difficulty staying ahead. The problem was going to be the long drop at the end. The bridge was a dozen levels below, and the only link was a service shaft, one of the internal transports he'd seen earlier. He'd returned to the hangar to reset the tracks it ran on, but the platform's motor had been irreparably damaged, which was going to make things very tricky indeed once Leela released its brake. The doctor picked up the trigger for the hyperspace bubble and looked expectantly at it.
You had better work, he said.
Doctor?
Leela's voice called.
I am close.
He leant into the microphone again. Remember to hold on tight. Leela ran. The opening was near, but the fear that she wasn't going to make it grew with each step. And then she was there, the hatch in front of her, and nothing beyond but darkness. She leapt without breaking stride, reaching out, trusting the doctor's words. There was a long moment of empty air, and then she landed on the platform. It was some kind of cart, but the shaft was too dark for her to see in detail. She reached around and found the lever he had told her to pull. There was a moment of sudden doubt, a fear that if she released the cart, she would ride to her doom. But then she felt the cold again, and the hairs at the back of her head started to lift as the spirit charged the air. Leela pulled the lever, and the cart began to move, slowly at first. She could feel the spirit reaching out for her. Then, picking up speed, it pulled away from her pursuer. Clinging on as the cart rattled and sped away, she had a sudden sense of freedom, her hair trailing behind her and the wind on her face. As the slope bottomed out and the cart began moving forwards instead of down, the sudden change in direction took Leela's feet out from under her. Then she was out of the darkness and back into the dim light of the ship. Standing in the doorway of the bridge, the doctor looked back into the transport hangar. More than a dozen tracks converged there, but he was only interested in one. A platform careened out of the darkness, racing towards the buffers. The impact threw its passenger forwards, but Leela rolled with the movement, tumbling over to come up on her feet.
Over here!
The doctor called. But Leela just stood, staring back into the tunnel. There was movement in the darkness. On the bridge, the connecting lead from the pilot to the computer began to flash furiously. As reality began to twist, a host of silently screaming faces pushed out of the dark. A hyperspace intrusion might move slowly, the doctor thought, but what it lacked in speed, it made up for in style. Leela slowly backed away with a hunter's precision, luring her target on, making sure it didn't lose her scent before it had entered the trap.
Come on!
The doctor shouted. Finally, she turned and ran, the consciousness surging after her. Looking into the screaming faces, the doctor realized this was a cold pain, born of sadness and despair. They represented the deaths of everybody on this ship, their last thoughts, their final moments of confusion and anguish, dragged out into a never-ending lifetime. The cook preparing a meal was a father thinking of his children. The worker hauling boxes was dreaming of the girl he had met. The engineer was thinking about her mother back home. A moment of death playing out for eternity. A final, inescapable prison. For a moment, he was lost to a nightmare he sometimes had, of screaming voices and a world dying in fire, crying out for help that never came, death and despair in the face of hopeless odds. A dream of a future forever denied.
Doctor!
Leela cried, racing past him. His fingers closed on the trigger. The projectors mounted on the doorframe hummed into life. And a moment later, the darkness was swallowed by a sphere of brilliant white light, a trap closing around the consciousness, dragging it back into normal space. The bubble hung still in the air for a second. And then it was gone. As the doctor turned to Leela, there was a cascade of clicks and hums from the instrument banks around them. The line from the ship to the pilot glowed as bright as the sun, as thoughts and memories and feelings were pushed back out to their hosts. And then, as those lives finally drifted away, so the light faded to nothing. The doctor knelt down to lay a hand against the pilot's face. At his touch, the HIMAC turned slowly towards him. It whispered a single word, Then its eyes closed and it fell back into the seat. A moment later, the doctor looked at Leela and gave a shake of his head. As he collected his coat and scarf, she tugged at his sleeve.
What did he say?
The doctor jammed his hat down on his head and gave the bridge one last look. His answer when it came was just one word. Peace.
The Ghost Trap by Nick Wallace was read by Louise Jameson and was a Big Finish production.